Café, eh? Por favor, mi amor.
Minerva, thought Lemony. Why does she have to have the weird name? You got it, Ma, she called. Coming right up.
Can?
Perla had only lived in the United States for 41 years. She couldn't be expected to learn English overnight.
Gracias, mija.
For example, when she tried to call her daughter Honey, she made it into Spanish. She called her La Honeys. In her mind, Honey started with a Mexican J and ended in a long E.
Las Honeys.
Perla sent a slow sigh upward to Our Lady of Guadalupe. She knew that real prayers, women's prayers, didn't even need words. What mother didn't understand her daughter's sighs? Her prayer said, this party is too much pressure. The Virgin would just nod. She knew all about complicated males. Perla's sisters were helping, of course, Lupita, Gloriosa. They were always with her in Big Angel. For holidays, funerals, weddings, births, baptisms, birthdays, for coffee, after divorces, sitting in at supper or breakfast, or cracking a fresh bottle, or playing dominoes. She's watching the bustle. She watched the little kids run around the yard with the Chiwini mole rats. Lupita ran the kitchen. La Gloriosa was late. It was her task to lead the children in their mad dashes and to keep the flow moving. Gloriosa was the directora de eventos. It was all a dance. She was always late. La Gloriosa, when you were glorious, you did what you had to do. The world could wait. Perla lit a cigarette. She had been quitting smoking for 50 years. She shrugged. Even La Gloriosa still smoked sometimes. Perla squinted. Who were these little kids?
Grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, grandnieces, neighbors.
There was a tall black kid lounging in a corner. She called Lalo. Mijo,
Juan, no, Toño, no, digo, Tato. ¿Cómo te llamas, pues, Ben?
She couldn't remember anybody's name anymore, and she didn't particularly care. Lalo was in his garage, watching Big Angel's old VHS tapes. There was, like, a whole library in cardboard boxes. He was in the middle of the 80s monster movie Chud. He paused it, rolled out of his garage, and ambled over. He had shed his suit and was in his Chargers jersey and giant gangsta shorts. Black Chuck Taylors, no socks. He told the little fat boy, Yo, mijo, don't be a chud. He towered over Perla. It's Lalo, ma, not Tato. What's up? He kissed her head. Minnie brought out the coffee, said, Move, huevo head.
I ain't got no huevo head. Check yourself, puppet.
It's like a soft-boiled egg, Minnie noted. I'm gonna kick you. In Spanish, Perla said, Who is that negro? Lalo said, That's your nephew, ma. What's he got on his head?
Padre's hat.
What's his name?
Rodney.
Minnie put the cup of coffee down before her.
Move, cue ball,
Minnie told Lalo and rubbed his shaved head.
Puppet, he said. Be careful nobody don't cut your strings.
Shut up, boy. Damn. Life is wonderful, Minerva, Perla told her, full of many wonders. I see ghosts. Cool, ma. Lemony went back inside to slave in the kitchen, slightly baffled, but that was what the old-timers did to you. Bad enough daddy was talking crazy, but now mom's was doing it.
Don't be no chud hole, Minnie,
Lalo called. He kept scratching at the Pop's Forever tattoo.
Pobre Rodney, Perla said. Is he uncomfortable?
About what? Lalo said. He's like freaking Rodney. He's always been here, ma. I was never white enough for your father's family, Perla told him. I mean, she was never white, Mama America.
Brown como café con leche.
But she was whiter than me.
Oh, sí, mijito.
I heard her calling me in India. I wasn't deaf, you know. She sipped her coffee. Too hot, she noted. Who made this? Anyway, your grandmother never approved of me. She thought I was low class. She called me a prostitute. He didn't know what to say to that. Dang, he said, then went back to his movie in the garage. He was trying to just shut it all out. His son had called him an hour before. They knew who did it.
Do what? Lalo had asked.
Oft tio Braulio.
No shit.
Word, Pops, his son said, so What you gonna do about it? And Lalo said, me? 5 p.m. Little Angel parked down the block. The neighborhood was damp in the gutters, but habitually sun-flogged and dusty-looking. The grass was yellow and the walls looked faded. He had grown up on the white side of town. The kids in school had thought his family was French. But his house could have been here. 1,200-square-foot box, bougainvillea, big wheels and scooters, abandoned in driveways, basketball hoops over the garage doors. Similar class stratum, the professor inside him lectured. Music was different, though. He walked up the street, felt like a camera was watching him, like eyes were at all the windows, locals peeping the Crown Vic, thinking pigs. He hung his head and slumped his shoulders as if he could become shorter and somehow invisible. Who's that gabacho? Oh, it's the gringo Mex. Dude looks like a narc. He always felt self-conscious just walking in the front door of Big Angel and Perla's house, like everybody else, as if he hadn't earned a membership yet to their club. But whenever he knocked or rang the bell, they all scolded him. What kind of a brother knocks? So he manned up and opened the heavy steel mesh security grate and stepped inside. People lounged around the big table set up in the living room, baseball caps with straight bills, cigarettes. La Gloriosa had just gotten there and stood in the bright dining alcove, back lit, hands on hips. Her Spanx were killing her. Her skirt was golden and flared off her brown legs. He saw the shadow of those legs through the fabric. Her hair, piling on her shoulders, was electric with highlights, like glitters on a sea of ink. She eyed him. He grinned. She was as magnificent as a velvet painting of an Aztec goddess in a taco shop. She had muscles. Mi amor, he said. Ay tú. La Gloriosa had no time for foolishness. She tipped her head back, dismissing him with her chin. Ringlets flew, a rebuke. He answered with a quick bounce of his eyebrows. Her head tipped down, ringlets cascading over her shoulders, a possible reconciliation. She looked up under her brows like a she-wolf. He flushed, made his eyes dewy. Her left eyebrow rose slowly and lodged. He looked at her collarbone, down but not indecently. Eyes rose slowly to meet hers. He smiled with one side of his mouth. Don't be naughty, she said. Perla came in from the backyard looking for more coffee. Es mi baby, she cried, staggering over to Little Angel and petting his face. She looked back and forth between them. Not this again, she said. La Gloriosa made a moochy lip mouth gesture at him that crinkled her nose. Then she vanished behind the pantry to rattle things in the sink in mock irritation. If he had been born with a crest, his feathers would have risen and he would have flown out to find her a pretty twig. Tu hermano está en su cama, Perla said, gesturing to the back room where Big Angel rested, always in bed. Little Angel said he must be exhausted. Siempre, pobre flaco. She was looking around, her empty coffee cup hanging off her finger. He took it from her and led her to the little aluminum table and sat her down. I'll get it, he said. Thank you, she said. Leche, please. Y azúcar. Say, sugar. Lots of sugar. La Gloriosa's back was to him as she scrubbed last night's pots. He stepped up to her and caught a sweet sniff as he leaned around her to get to the coffee pot on the counter. She felt him leaning in, and she got a blue bolt of electricity right up her neck, but she showed nothing. Excuse me, he said, putting a hand on her back. She jumped. I am 60 years old, she whispered. 60's the new 40, he said, and I'm almost 50, so you're younger than I am. She had to think about that one. The coffee pot said, gloop. She squinted at him. Don't play with me, she said. He stood there, coffee steaming. She was close enough that he could feel her body heat. She smelled like almonds and vanilla. He could tell she did not remember that once, when they were both many years younger, she had drunk too much Thunderbird at a rare gathering at his parents' house. She had been showing his mother Latin dance moves, la cumbia, rumba, cha-cha. She was hilariously pickled by the end of the night, and she had found him in the hall outside the bedroom, used for coats, and had leaned on him and said, "Kiss me goodnight, you bad boy." He gave her a teenage peck. "That is not how you kiss a woman," she said, and kissed him on the mouth. "That's how you kiss a woman." And grabbed her coat and was gone like some apparition from beyond. "I am not playing," he said now.
"You think it's so easy?"
"It is easy."
"Oh, sí, cabrón. And what do you want from me?"
She blew hair out of her face.
"What a pendejo."
"Do you want me to stop?" he said. She banged a pot in the sink, stared out the kitchen window at the vatos standing around in the driveway. She shook out her curls, sighed. "No," she said. He took the coffee and the carnation milk can and the sugar to Perla.
"Instant," she said.
"No, coffee pot." She made a face. These old-timers, they lived for instant coffee. Perla didn't even look at him, simply gestured at Gloriosa with her eyebrows.
"Pica flor," she said.
"Me?" She blew on her coffee. He thought about how he'd explain that to his students. One of those Mexican phrases. Honeybee? No. Bumblebee? Nope. Hummingbird? A creature who goes from flower to flower, sampling the nectar? He cleared his throat.
"Go talk to your brother," Perla said.
First, he stopped in the living room and inspected Big Angel's citizenship papers. Big Angel kept them in a little frame on the wall for everyone to admire. Miniature American flags tucked in the corners. A faded picture of the kids, Indio and Braulio. Little Angel squinted. He had been beautiful, that Braulio, cherubic. And little Lalo, all cheeky and curly. Minnie apparently hadn't been born yet. The family portrait hung beside that. It was in a huge white frame with gold filigree vines carved into the wood. A color photo from Sears. Mama America holding a photograph of Dad, and Big Angel, Marilu, and Cesar gathered around her. There it was. They hadn't thought to invite him. There was no slight intended, which made it feel worse somehow. Minnie came up beside him and looked at it.
"The whole family, tío," she said.
"Most of it." She looked at him, back at the picture, at him, at the picture.
"Oh," she said.
"Yeah."
"Oops," she said.
"A minor oversight," he said with chipper self-pity. "You got an identity crisis, huh? Secrets out. You ain't alone. Feeling alone like that. Some of us know what that feels like." She went out the front door and wandered down the street. He walked the 14 steps back to the bedroom door. It terrified him. Little Angel was certain his brother would be dead, or he would be in some gruesome medical crisis, or would smell somehow. Some embarrassing stink that would upset them both. But none of these things were true. Big Angel was sitting up with his back against a pile of pillows. He wore a bright white undershirt and comfy pajama pants, thick white gym socks on his feet. He smelled like baby powder and a little sweat. Big Angel was addressing a small clutch of ninth graders who stood at the foot of his bed looking awkward. Each of the girls had one arm folded across her belly and clamped to her ribs with the other arm dangling as if lifeless. The boys had the ends of their fingers stuffed into their pants pockets. Big Angel was saying a panda bear walked into a restaurant.
"Yeah, Pops?"
"Sí." "And he sat at the counter
and asked for food and a Pepsi.
So what happened, Pops?
He ate, drank, pulled out a pistol, and shot the cook.
What?
As he left, he shouted, "Look it up on Google." Big Angel was grinning like a mad street person, eyes glittering and feral. The kids looked at one another.
Did they look it up, Pops?
Of course. Do you know what it said? They shook their heads. It said, "Panda Bear, a vegetarian mammal that eats shoots and leaves." He laughed. They looked at one another again.
"I get it," said one fat boy.
"Out, mocosos," Little Angel said.
They shuffled out. "I ain't got no boogers, tío," the fat boy protested. Newspapers were scattered all over the bed. Big Angel had circled an infamous picture about 100 times. A dead toddler, face down in European surf, drowned and cast off like a little bag of unwanted clothes. Big Angel saw Little Angel looking at it. He picked up the paper, folded it carefully, and set it on his bedside table.
"Nobody wants the immigrant," Big Angel said. "He drowned that boy."
"I know. Trying to get a new life."
"I know.
Our people look like that," Big Angel said. "In the desert."
"Our people."
"I'll have to think about that one," Little Angel said. It occurred to him that maybe Big Angel wasn't a Republican after all. He realized he knew very little about his big brother.
"Seems like we've been here a really long time," he said. "Seems there are very few De La Cruz bodies in the desert."
He couldn't stop himself, though his brother's face darkened.
"We're pretty much Americans now, right? I mean, this is a post-immigration family. By what? Almost 50 years?
Jesus."
"I'm still Mexican," Little Angel said.
"Mexican-American? But let's face it, I don't live in, what, Sinaloa?" Big Angel wiped his lips. He had thought they were wet, but they were chapped.
"Must be nice, carnal," he said, "to choose who you are."
Little Angel looked off into a fascinating corner of the room. "Let's not get into this today."
"What?"
"Your I'm more Mexican than you are games."
"I thought you just said you were a gringo."
"Eat me," Little Angel muttered. "Culero." They were suddenly 11.
"Okay."
Big Angel shrugged one shoulder.
"I'll be dead tomorrow, so no problem."
"Jesus Jiminy jumpin' Christ." Little Angel smiled warmly. Big Angel patted the bed.
"Sit."
Apparently the ethnic civil war had passed, like one of the tardy little rain clouds, speeding east to collapse against the Cuyamaca Mountains.
"Carnal,"
Big Angel said, eyes suddenly as bright as little black campfires.
"Remember how my father peeled oranges?"
Little Angel nodded. "I remember our father, yeah." Big Angel took the hint.
"Our father put chile powder on oranges.
And salt.
Tajin."
They found this funny for some reason.
"He peeled oranges in one long strip," Big Angel shouted. "He made snakes out of the peel every time."
They laughed some more. It felt good to laugh. Mindless. Safe.
"He told me they were tapeworms," Little Angel said. "Did I ever tell you about?"
Big Angel blurted, and he was off on a binge of storytelling. Jokes and sorrows, strange tales of their ancestors, questions about Seattle, when he began a detailed tour of the many medicine bottles on his table, and doses and times of administering them. Little Angel gave up standing there awkwardly and climbed into bed beside his brother.
Silence. Good talk. Oysters. A day without pain.
The night before the party. 10 p.m. Big Angel was asleep when Perla finally came into the room. Her days seemed endless. So much work to do. So much organizing, so much praying. She felt like she was carrying the tumors sometimes. But she dared not acknowledge that terrible thought. She did not deserve self-pity, she told herself. There would be time for that, soon enough.
Most everybody had gone home. La Gloriosa had ushered little Angel out as if he were a stray cat. It was a wonder she hadn't hit him with a broom. Now she could finally leave. She put on her coat and hurried to her car with her keys in her fist, sticking out between her clenched fingers in case any pendejo stepped up. She had mace in her purse and a taser she'd bought in Tijuana. She was in no mood. La Mini went to Dunkin' Donuts and bought a box of donuts for her man, El Tigre. He could get behind some donut action for sure. She couldn't figure out how he kept his six-pack eating all the bad crap he ate. It cost her a fortune to do hot wraps to try to sweat it off. Minnie's oldest son was a sailor and told her that in Portland there was some kind of voodoo donut shop, like you could buy a coffin full of donuts. Crazy hippies. The boys on his ship were all tweaked about bacon-wrapped maple bars. She wished she could get some of those. Her man would love them. Back at the house, diehards muttered in the living room. Video games bleeped and yowled behind the locked garage door. A pile of peewees snored and snuffled in the back room, layered with dogs. Perla went into the bathroom, brushed her teeth, and undressed in the dark. She didn't like to look at herself in the mirror. Now she wore big white grandmother underpants, and her bra held back a flood of flesh. Well, the hills are old, but they still have flowers on them. 70 was difficult for a woman who imagined herself as a 35-year-old with a slightly bad hip, but otherwise in good shape. She pulled on her nightgown and crawled into bed very slowly. It took real control to get in without bouncing the mattress. Big Angel was sweet and friendly all day long, unless you bounced him unexpectedly or bumped into him. Then he'd snap. Everyone cried a little when he shouted, "You idiot!" Her jaws hurt from clenching her teeth. One knee, then the other, popping. She grimaced. She got her bottom settled and lay her head down very slowly. She slept on the left side of the bed. He was on the side with the little table, all his pill bottles there within reach, looking like the model of a futuristic city, plastic skyscrapers loaded with colorful pills. Tomorrow, she was thinking. Diosito lindo, get me through tomorrow. When her head sank to her pillow, he said, "Flaca, has everybody gone home?" "Damn it! Flaco, I thought you were asleep." "I am asleep," he said, "but I watch you, even when I'm dreaming." He had been saying strange things for a while now. He'd always said them. He was a genius. Geniuses said crazy things. But he was even stranger now, carrying on like some brujo out in the wilderness. He had told Minnie, "Rivers believe in God." What the hell was that supposed to mean? He had told poor Lalo, "Birds have always known the language of the dead." Over breakfast one morning, he had looked at her and said, "Flaca, the universe can fit inside an egg." Mildly, because she didn't know how to handle these outbursts without inflaming them, she'd said, "Oh, really, Flaco?" "Yes, but the hen that sits on this egg must be so big, we can't see her. I wonder what will hatch when the universe cracks open." She'd replied, "How nice," while silently crying out to God and the Virgin to help her. "Flaca," he said brightly, as if they were at lunch on a summer's day. "See? Do you remember when we met?" "How could I forget? Go to sleep." "And then I didn't see you for a year." "Yes. But then I saw you at the movies." "I know, Flaco. I was there. Go to sleep." "It was that nasty little theater we called Las Pulgas." "Yes, you got fleas in there. It was filthy." "We saw that doll people movie. You were in the row in front of me." "Puppet people, Flaco. I still have nightmares." "I bought you a Pepsi Cola." "A 7-Up, Flaco. You called it un 7-Up." They laughed. And then he said,
"Stop.
On the beach. Cochino." She put her hands over her face and groaned. "You had a white dress, and you lay on the sand, and I rubbed your back."
"Oye, Angel, enough.
You were lying on my jacket, and as I rubbed your back, your skirt rose.
Dios.
You shook. I saw your hands dig in the sand. He'd been 17 and she's 16. That night, the moon was a curl of God's fingernail. A group of kids from the secundaria had lit a bonfire a quarter kilometer away. The water was black with glowing white foam and a long highway of silver coins tossed across the swells by the light above. It started with a kiss. Her tongue invaded his mouth. It was slender and cold and tasted of the strawberry juice they had just bought on the malecón. Big Angel understood right away this tongue thing. She knew about the world. At first he knelt beside her. Water was coming out of the sand and soaking his trouser knees. He had not put his hands on a girl's back before. He was hypnotized by the feeling of her tight shoulders and the way they relaxed under his hands, and her sighs, how her ribs could be felt through the exquisite pliancy of her flesh, her heat radiating through the cotton, the straps of her brassiere crossing her back, and the slight swellings on the sides where her breasts began. He trembled just slightly, as if he had carried very heavy bundles down a long road, and he suddenly found himself straddling the backs of her legs without quite knowing how he got there. He leaned into her, smelling her hair and her perfume, feeling the alarming heat of her thighs through the legs of his pants, and then that white dress, all one piece, rising farther. Was that another scent? His throat hurt, and his jaw ached from clenching it so tightly. He looked down and watched the skirt creep up the backs of her legs. He could not stop. He leaned forward and stared. She knew he was looking. Her thighs tightened, and she shivered, and he knew without knowing what was happening between them. Then the double curve of her bare bottom had peeked at him. "And I saw your nalgas." She laughed deep in her throat, her nasty laugh. And his hands had slid up her thighs and encountered her. She jumped and sighed, and he drew breath, carefully moved his fingers into that wet heat, afraid he might overstep his bounds, face burning, hands shaking. She was like an ocean there. "I have a little fountain," she said, "for you." His own pants were drenched. He didn't know what was happening. Did this happen to men? He was worried about hiding it. Then he forgot to care. For the rest of his life, that would remain his favorite moment. They lay there at once in their bed and upon that old warm beach. She put her head close to his shoulder. "And then what?" she said. "You are my first." "Aye, what an angel." He touched her face. "I kissed your bottom." Proud of himself, he crossed his arms behind his head. The cool tremble of her cinnamon curve, the dangerous shadow between her nalgas, the sweet scent of her back and skin, the tang of her like liquor, swimming in his limbs and head, his shaking hands. He wanted to smoke a Pall Mall. After a while, she said, "That wasn't all you did." That comfortable old silence spread between them, as warm and luxurious as a well-fed cat. "I'm tired," he said. She patted him softly. "Go to sleep," she said. "I astral project," he told her, "so I don't get any rest." "Ah, cabrón," she said. "I can leave my body and walk around."
Qué?"
she said. It was as if she could hear him smiling in the dark. "I don't need a wheelchair for doing that, flaca."
"What are you talking about? You've gone crazy. First my nalgas,
then leaving your body? Stop talking crazy.
Kissing your nalgas made me leave my body, he said.
I'm warning you.
Little angel, got to Mary Lou's house all right. I saw him just now. He's going to sleep on her couch.
You scare me.
I'm not crazy, he said. Just looking around so I can see what's going on, so I'll know where my soul will go when I'm finished here.
The breath she took shuddered in his chest. Well, don't look in my sister's bathroom.
He chuckled. I can't visit La Gloriosa in the bubble bath?
No, she said.
They lay on their backs, 100 foggy scenes in the dark, hovering over them.
A good life, he said.
She took his hand.
Because of you, Angel.
Because of you, Perla.
We did it together.
He yawned.
Eso sí, he said, and turned to her in the dark. But I am tired now.
Sleep, she said.
More tired than that.
There was a long pause.
Flaco, no.
It might be time, mi amor.
No, no.
My work is done, flaca. Our children are grown. I think I'm done.
Angel, no digas eso.
She scolded him like his mother used to.
You're talking like a crazy man again. We have grandchildren. Your work is not done. What about me?
He sighed, squeezed her hand.
Don't make me mad, she said.
Or what?
I'll spank you with my slipper.
La chancla. That might be nice, he said.
He smiled. She felt it.
After a moment, she said,
Flaco, you can't really see my sister naked, can you?
But he was already snoring.
10:30 p.m. Little Angel was stretched out on Marilu's couch. She wouldn't hear of him sleeping at the hotel, even though he'd left all his stuff in his perfectly good air-conditioned room. She had given him a toothbrush of his own and a towel. She had even bought him a package of boxers
and a nice Bob Dylan t-shirt at Target.
Amphetamine 1965 Dylan, with a harmonica, Wayfarers, and shock hair. She thought he needed a haircut. Her kids were in L.A. going to college, starting businesses, giving her grandchildren, spreading the seed. Her couch wasn't so bad. Well, it wasn't really her couch. It was her mother's couch. That astounding America. Little Angel thought of her often and started to laugh almost every time. Nobody else thought she was all that funny, but they hadn't seen what he and Big Angel had seen. Sometimes when things were dull, one or the other of them would say, Parrot. The others could not understand what was so damned funny. They asked over and over, and neither brother would tell. It had become some kind of sacred secret, this memory. Only for them. Little Angel actually considered telling Marilu about it, but decided this was not the time. Later. But he was busting to tell it now. Everything was shifting. Delineations of a new paradigm in trans-border familial dynamics. A theorem. Marilu had been living with the old woman for 3 years, caring for her. After her divorce, she hadn't really been able to afford her own place. Yes, it was embarrassing at 69 to camp out at Mama's house, but nobody else had been free to do it. God truly had his own ways of arranging things. Hermanita, Little Angel said. She loved to be treated by him as if she were a young girl, fresh in her teens. Brother, she replied. How's this situation all going to work out? He opened his hands in the air. She sat on a kitchen chair and ate peanut M&Ms from a small bowl in her lap. La Gloriosa kept trying to get her to come to the gym with her. She had been on a diet for 40 years. Well, Gloriosa wasn't here right now. She ate another. They were just two pale souls in the dark of the world, quiet in their refuge. As if everything was well, as if the night held no terror, and the stars circled silent and icy all around them. They always spoke English, except for little bursts of Spanish. If you looked at Little Angel, you'd never know he was Mexican, unless you looked really close. His sister in La Paz called him Apache Nose, Nariz de Apache, when she wasn't hissing insults at him. She didn't know the semi-handsome crook in that nose had come from one of Big Angel's punches.
Marilu watched him from the kitchenette. Little gringo. His mother was an American, after all, made the others mad. Papa Antonio leaving them behind for a gringa? Big Angel called it buying a Cadillac. She smiled a little. Then she shook her head. Ay Dios, she said, as had every generation of Mexican women back through time. She and Little Angel were intimate strangers they hadn't even met until he was 10. Little freckle-nosed pudge. ¿Y tú? She had asked. ¿Cómo te llamas? Ángel. How are you named Ángel? Ángel is standing right over there, she cried, pointing at her big brother. He'd shrugged. Papa forgot he already used that name, I guess. This struck everybody as hilarious. It was so true. Even now it made her grin. Then her grin slid away, and she ate more chocolate. Frankly, Little Angel didn't like the crunching. Having been raised in isolation, he didn't enjoy the sound of others chewing. The rest of the clan seemed to take comfort in it. Baby brother, she said, you know, Ángel can't last much longer. I know. He wanted a birthday, pues, a last birthday. She hove to her feet, back hurting, and brought forth a plate of Mexican pan dulce. He couldn't resist the pig-shaped gingerbread cookies, marranitos. She liked the sticky rainbow-colored stuff with shaved coconut on it. She set a glass of milk on the coffee table for him. He sat up and reached for it. Everyone knows he won't see another one, right? He said. Most of them, sure. She shrugged, bit her pastry. Some people aren't so smart. Leave it to Big Angel, Little Angel said, to attend his own funeral. He sipped his milk. He was thinking about Lalo telling him, talk's all we got. They watched Jimmy Fallon before going to bed. Little Angel thinking, is that it? Life just ends? And we watch TV? Little Angel lay on the pull-out couch thinking. He was covered in those multicolored Tijuana blankets tourists like to buy. I am a cliché, he thought. Where's my sombrero? His girlfriend in Seattle didn't know about the name they knew him by. He was an angel to her. He used his middle name up north, Gabriel. It was so romantic. Don Antonio, their great father, had been called Angel by his mother, the legendary Mama Meche, grandmother to the tribe. He was her baby, what they called chiquiado, spoiled in the far weaker American term. A boy cuddled and carried whose mother's spit healed his every scratch, who could do no wrong. It wasn't lost on Big Angel and his sisters that this pitiless old lady was named Mercy. The siblings thought of their father as first angel, el primer ángel. It was like some South American novel. Every man in the family with the same name. At least they had been spared a sister named Ángela, though one of the grandnieces was named Angelita. It was a swirl. He caught small flashes of family history like shreds of colored paper spinning in the wind, until massive assaults of revelations and confessions came out of nowhere and destroyed whatever drinking party they threw. He put his hands behind his head. Little Angel Gabriel was the third angel, after Big Angel and Don Antonio, el primer ángel. He had hung like a moth in the spider web of his parents' marriage. Don Antonio, strangely truculent and guarded in one corner of their apartment, fuming over racial slights at the hands of gringos cabrones in his diminished immigrant life. He oozed cigarette smoke from his mouth and nostrils like a burning barn, his broken teeth like the shattered boards of the barn door. Teeth worn down to painful stubs from their nightly grinding. Nightmares of guilt and regret for his many sins made him embrace the endless pain in his mouth. Those without pain infuriated him, and those who feared pain, who did not suffer as bravely as his victims did, were to be reviled, not pitied. Don Antonio had seen men beaten with bats who made less fuss than his boys did when they fell down and split their knees. To hurt his children was to prepare them for life. He stared at Little Angel with disdain and fear. He didn't enjoy hurting him, but it was his duty.
I don't know, Don Antonio had confessed to Big Angel, if he is a genius or a psychopath. He's American, Big Angel said.
Chingado.
Don Antonio, full of rage over Little Angel's mother.
So American.
Betty.
He had looked for the ultimate Americana, and he'd found her. All Indiana milk and honey, cornflower blue eyes, thought herself so superior, turning his son into some American faggot, buying him comic books and hippie records, yet asking Antonio to wield the belt when the boy transgressed. There were better punishments than belts, better ways to love him into manhood. He had smoked and glared and thought, tough little bastard, though. Little Angel had stayed that way no matter what Don Antonio did. Dad, dead and more unreachable than ever. And now, Big Angel was going to die. His brother had always had a rich voice, not a basso voice, but a rich lower baritone, strong. Perhaps the most shocking thing about his condition now was not his skeletal thinness or his diminished physical stature, but his voice, a weird, reedy alto, a voice that sounded like the big brother of the family had inhaled helium or had somehow reversed in age as the body collapsed. He had his baby angel voice back, that six-year-old's voice, and six-year-old's eyes. That ravaged face held two ardent coals. His black eyes shone with mad light, hunger for the world, amusement, and excitement. They raged with delight in everything. Little Angel had never seen his big brother look more excited. He seemed so keyed up with energy that if his legs could hold him, he would leap from his wheelchair and play hopscotch with his grandchildren. In spite of his obvious pain, he had a smile on his face all the time. One of his uncles had raised his eyebrows at Little Angel and spun his finger around beside his head, but Little Angel thought his brother was anything but crazy. He had asked in the sick bed as they shared his pillows, "What are you teaching, Carnal?"
"Reynolds Price."
"Who is that?"
"Novelist, poet."
"Tell me a line."
"I'm waiting for Jesus in a room made of salt."
Big Angel had thought about that.
"That's good," he said.
"That's me."
"He says if he cries, the room will dissolve."
Big Angel rubbed his eyes.
"Yes," he said.
"He's dead now," Little Angel said.
"I know that from the poem."
Big Angel's thick, dark hair was now a white post-chemo flat top, little moles visible on his scalp. But that, too, made him look alarmingly young. Don Antonio had kept his boys in crew cuts. Little Angel had been the first to grow freak hair and disgrace them all by having his ear pierced. It hadn't taken long, though, for time to roll over them all, until the nephews discovered Van Halen and grew mullets and got tattoos. Another generation ruined. Big Angel and his father had forced Spanish on Little Angel with brutal force. Still, he was an English speaker. It was the language he used to speak to his mother, after all. They had wrestled to a draw. "I gave you books," Big Angel noted. "Don't forget."
"I never forget.
But then I gave you books, too."
"Travis McGee mysteries."
Little Angel smiled. Perla threw them away because they had girls on the covers. There had been nothing to add to that. 1 a.m., La Mini finally crawled onto the couch. Her man was asleep in their bedroom. She didn't feel like it was mean of her to wait till he was snoring. She was too tired to snuggle with him. She sipped her wine. Snoring. Somehow it put her to sleep. So no touching right now. But later, maybe. She was tired from a lot of things. She just sat in the dark living room smoking and thinking and listening to some John Legend and Prince down low. A glass of white wine, one slice of a peach in it. She painted her nails in three shades of purple, dark, light, and palest lavender. A slender gold bracelet loosely circled her left wrist. It said, Mouse in old-school cursive script. She put Little Red Corvette on repeat. La Minnie did not cry, but some nights she wanted nothing but the darkness on her skin. 2 a.m. The pain awoke him, as it often did. Perla was making soft noises in her sleep. She made soft pew sounds with her lips. He reached out in the dark, felt for the codeine pills, and swallowed two with gulps of tepid water. He realized he hated the taste of chlorine. That was one thing he would not miss.
Too cheap to buy bottled water, he said.
Pew, said Perla. He listened to the sounds of his house. He would miss it, that was for sure. It was a bit worn down now, true. Needed paint, needed new carpets and better furniture, curtains. He was recently surprised to see a sheet thumbtacked over one of the back windows. There were nail holes and scuffs and dings all over the walls. The ceiling in Braulio's old bedroom was still stained brown over one corner from a leak in the roof. Big Angel remembered how he had climbed up there in a storm with a pot of tar and a spackling knife, back when he could climb. He had hopped up onto the outside water softener and onto the roof of the tiny water heater closet attached to the back of the kitchen, and up on top in the rain, filling the hole in the tar paper shingles until he had been sure the dripping was remedied. He could smell it lying there in the dark. The scent of California rain, carrying the perfume of wet dirt over the roof, and the smell of the shingles, and the smell of the tar. For a moment he wasn't in his bed, but up there again, reliving the astonishment of standing astraddle his roof, and seeing the world from on high, seeing the lightning striking the hills of Tijuana, seeing everything laid before him, nothing but possibilities and opportunities. Oh, this humble house had seemed such a palace then. It still felt that way. Every day, in the weariest corner of the house, he could remember that he had snuck north from Tijuana once, and now he owned an American home. Silently, he rose out of himself and left the bed. He walked down the hall. The breeze was wonderfully refreshing. As it moved through him, it knew to find the tumors and cool them. Such relief, like fresh water on a sunburn. Very good. Gracias. He saw the two couches side by side in the living room. One had been bought long ago on layaway from Montgomery Ward's, and nobody but he and Perla knew that Minnie had been made there. He knew it was true, for the simple reason that they hadn't had enough beds for everyone in those days. And he and his wife had shared the couch so Braulio could sleep in a bed so he'd do well in school. But of course, he had been kicked out of school, so they had taken their bed back, and now Minnie slept on that couch when she stayed with them, her body an echo of its own creation. The second couch was in bad shape, but that made Big Angel like it more. They had gone to collect it from his father's sad apartment after he had died. It had cigarette burns in the arms. They had brought it home to find an old 1967 nudie magazine under one of the pillows. Perla threw it away, but Big Angel rescued it and hid it out in his workshop. He was 13 again every time he looked through it, astonished to see white women bared to the world. Tired women on piano benches, grimacing up at cameras as if they had forgotten what smiles looked like. Women playing volleyball nude on some scrap of beach caught forever in mid-levitation, their breasts seeming to yearn for flight. It was a gallery of sorrows. And he had found his father's thumbprint smeared on the cheap print of a single naughty nightcap erotic story. He liked to sit on the couch and rub the cigarette burns with his fingertips. The back of the couch along the tops of the pillows had stains from his father's hair pomade. Big Angel remembered the brand. Dixie Peach. I remember everything, he said aloud. Like the ornamental iron railing along the edge of the living room, where it dropped a step to the entryway of the house, a useless little fence. He laid his hand on it, and he remembered El Indio chasing Braulio and poor Lalo through the house. How small they were, and how Lalo had run smack into the railing and split his eyebrow. Oh, the wailing! Blood everywhere! Lalo's caterwauling had started mini-crying. The drive with Perla holding paper towels to Lalo's head. It had been only the first of Big Angel's many drives to Paradise Valley Hospital's emergency room. Two stitches, which gave Lalo a devilish split eyebrow he later used as a weapon on the muchachas. And now, Lalo drove him there every time he thought he was dying. The patriarch padded the couch. When Little Angel's American mother threw their father out for sleeping with her best friend in their bed, he had come here. They had sat at that same kitchen table, drinking coffee and staring at each other. Big Angel stood, drifted to the middle of the room, and invited every memory to come to him and clothe him in beauty.
Part 2. Then. En aquel entonces. Big Angel was still a boy when he first saw Perla, barely 16. He wore American black jeans and a ridiculous yellow checkered blazer his tia Cuca had sent him from Mazatlan. It came by fishing boat, something that seemed altogether normal in La Paz, but would assume mythical proportions later in San Diego.
Check it, dog. Pops got his threads off a fishing boat, no lie.
The same jacket he would christen on the beach within a year. His father always made Angel dress up when he came to the police station with him.
Un caballero, he told his son, always dresses well, is always clean-shaven except for his mustache.
That has to be trimmed carefully, and fingernails always short and clean. Otherwise, he's no gentleman. He also made Angel call the shoeshine man, with the rag tied on his head and an ugly little wooden box with a footrest on top, maestro. Angel was already too old to ride behind his father on the massive police motorcycle, but he no longer had any physical intimacy with him, and Angel took advantage of the rare days when his father felt disposed to allow him to cling as they sped along. Some days were like that, inexplicable days of grace. It was a huge thrill to ride across La Paz with his father. The police uniform was, of course, intensely dramatic. The shiny badge in bronze and ceramic with its eagle and cactus centerpiece. The mirror-bright black knee boots. The immense pistola in a creaking leather oil-scented holster. And the inscrutable twin pools of nothing when the aviator shades covered his father's eyes. But being perched behind the vast oaken back of his father, the Harley thrumming beneath them as they slanted in and out of traffic, that was the greatest thrill of his days. He watched people slow and pull aside, fearing Don Antonio, seeing the jefe de patrullas motociclistas roaring down the road. His thought, beaming it out to the world like a lighthouse beacon, "My father, my father." He would shout into the wind, "Siren!" And his father would hit the button with his thumb, and the shiny silver klaxon mounted on the front fender would yawp hideously, frightening people and animals for a block. These two burning through the city like furious gods. Angel might get permission if he had curried favor, but little Pato and Maria Luisa were forbidden from even touching the big machine. They all called Cesar el Pato Donald because his rusty voice sounded like Donald Duck, and when he got mad, they laughed until they cried. Their laughter enraged him, so his squawk became more frantic, and they laughed harder. It was his misfortune that, as he grew, His voice lowered into a deep mallard's squawk, and the name never left him. But not even Donald Duck could touch the Harley. Don Antonio kept it spotless, polished. Like many houses in La Paz in those days, theirs had a rickety wooden gate that hid a dirt courtyard with a ciruelo and a coconut palm, a woven palm frond palapa, and a hammock. The motorcycle rested beneath the palapa and a rainproof tarp like some mythical beast that slept standing, that might awaken and eat any of them at the slightest provocation. In the early mornings when Mama America was cooking breakfast in the open kitchen, smoke billowing from the wood-burning stove, tortillas heating on the sheet-iron comal over flames, the green parrot and the mourning doves in their wooden cages, the children would pause outside the small chicken coop and watch the Harley sleep. Their father's snores were loud, even out here, so they knew it was safe to approach his steed. He called it El Caballo Mayor. Mother was aware of their curiosity, but kept her back to them. She feigned deep interest in boiling frijoles and chopping tomatoes and onions. She melted a pond of lard in the huge skillet and dropped beans and soup into it with a savage roaring of fat and a vivid white cloud of steam and smell. The parrot gripped his guano-caked perch and flew in place inside his cage, maniacally beating his wings until the cage wobbled on its nail, shrieking warnings to the world that the fire was out of control. She ignored it. She mashed the beans into the lard, spooning the hot lard back over the beans until it had all fried into a viscous mass. The children were on their own. They had chores to do before school, sweeping, feeding the animals, tending the laundry, or taking it down. They were also expected to collect the eggs their three hens offered up. She knew they would waste time before school looking for iguanas or teasing the idiotic turkey, La Chichona. They had a fatal interest in the forbidden motorcycle, so she didn't watch them, and she let them peek. She observed them nonetheless with the supernatural powers of the Mexican mother. Ears that could hear the change in a child's footstep, that could hear an intake of breath, or worse, whispering. Her slipper could come off in less than a second, and the dreaded chancla would be flailing at their behinds if they were found misbehaving. Angel was skinny, dark. He was already too old to spank, but that wouldn't stop the chancla. He looked angry all the time because he had inherited his father's flagrant eyebrows, a jungle on his brow ridge that grew together above his nose. He had combed his hair into an Elvis pomp, though he couldn't manage sideburns yet. With his finger over his lips, he led the two chiquitos on tiptoes under the palapa and lifted the edge of the tarp so they could see the motorcycle's great front tire angled jauntily as if it were the foreleg of a steed, hoof tipped in sleep, and the fat fender above it. They sighed. "Muchachos," Mama said, and they scattered. The big motorcycle was as loud as a summer storm. Cops in their finned patrol cars with the single red light bubble on top lifted a finger at them or held a hand out the window. Don Antonio merely nodded, his cap at an angle on his head, his hair heavy and plastic with Dixie Peach, imported from Los Angeles or some other exotic gringo place where he had aunts. That Germanic-looking police cap never budged, tipped slightly over his right eye, high-peaked, just touching with its gleaming black bill the top of his inscrutable aviator sunglasses. For Angel, La Paz was mostly light and smell, the sunlight bouncing off the sea and the backs of whales, silvered by marlins and waves and sand. Ricocheted from bare rock spires and desert shimmers was as saturating as a flood. Yellow, blue, clear, white. Everywhere vibrating. Everywhere frank and blunt and without nuance. Red flowers, yellow, blue as plastic, light in cataracts. Angel also loved the rainy days.